You're listening to Afternoons on 4BC.
You are doing that. It's a big year ahead in the United States, here and everywhere else. In America, many are saying it's the most consequential election year in a very long time. Our friend TJ O'Hara, himself an independent candidate for the presidency in 2012, will know more about that and joins us from outside San Diego. TJ, lovely to hear your voice again.
Good to hear you, Greg.
You might have heard me out of the news just talking about controversy about referees and some of their decisions before we get on to American politics. I know you love your sport. I guess it's the same kind of thing over there, right? Controversy fuels a lot of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. A week doesn't go by that there isn't a controversy in sports at this point.
Yeah, and people kind of enjoy it. Going back to politics, it's almost historic in terms of where you're at. You're 8 months away from the election. You know who the candidates are, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, absent some kind of disaster, which is always possible, particularly given their age. But Donald Trump is ahead in all the polls, nearly all the polls, including in most of the swing states that will decide the election. So how fixed or locked in is that support? And what is that support for Trump over Biden at this stage reflecting? What's going on?
I think Trump's core supporters are very locked in. Nothing that anyone else says matters to them, and nor could anything happen that would shake their support for him. But it's exactly the same thing for President Biden's core supporters. Then there's another percentage of supporters on both sides that I'd characterize as falling into the lesser of two evils group. Their support for either isn't an indication of approval, but rather an indication of their perception that the other candidate would be worse. Now, think about that. The United States presidency may very well be decided on a basis of who's less bad, Biden or Trump. As much as the Democrats like to try and suggest that Trump's a threat to democracy, there's an equally large percentage of the electorate that believes that Biden's a threat to democracy, too.
Yeah. How do you see that?
I think the parties are the biggest threat to democracy, quite honestly. I think they're remarkably ineffective, and they put politics in front of the people. And if there's ever going to be a threat to democracy, it'll be the parties.
Yeah. And I know that's one of the reasons you ran yourself back in 2012. You were sick of all of that and wanted to more or less run as an independent. How hard is that? And I'll get to Robert Kennedy in a moment too. But how hard a thing is that to do in America? Because obviously you require huge amounts of money, right? And a big organization.
Well, it's very tough. It costs about $50 to $70 million just to get on the ballots of all 50 states. Every state has different rules and regulations. They have different counts that you have to have as an independent. And you have to, when I talk counts, I'm talking about signatures. You have to put out petitions. Then they try and disqualify the petitions and the signatures. In the meanwhile, it costs nothing for the Democrat and Republican candidates to get on the ballots. So you're starting $50 to $70 million behind them and the enormous amount of time it takes to gather the signatures. So it's extremely difficult.
We have Robert Kennedy Jr. running as an independent. And again, you'll know more about what running as an independent is like. He's got the great advantage of the name, Robert Kennedy Jr. Although it's interesting, TJ, I saw a story out of the U.S. a couple of weeks ago where 83% of 18 to 24-year-olds thought Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was actually his father, Robert, who actually was assassinated in 1968, which would have made him 99 now. Curious.
He'd probably still be more spry than Joe.
I think there might be a little work to do in your education system as well.
Yeah, no question about that.
All right, I want to ask you about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Let me play a little snip, and I'll ask you your thoughts.
I started thinking when I saw the censorship, which I never believed the Democratic Party, moving to censor political opponents and everybody being okay with it. I saw this explosion of chronic disease in our country that was just being covered up. You know, diabetes today, we spend more on diabetes than we do for our national defense. This is crazy. I mean, my generation, 70-year-old men, autism rates are 1 in 10,000 today, right now, 1 in 10,000. In my kids' generation, 1 in every 34 kids, 1 in every 22 boys, and nobody's explaining this. Why are we the sickest nation on the planet? And then, you know, I saw the Ukraine war and the Democrat and Republican parties become the parties of war. Nobody's asking the questions like with Iraq. You know, nobody asks the lessons we were supposed to have learned from Vietnam about not getting into wars of choice. So I saw all this stuff happening. I felt like I was in a unique position to be able to stop it and to be able to change the direction of the country.
See, what I find, TJ, out of all of that is this guy is incredibly intelligent. He's got a lot of interesting thoughts that don't really match either side in totality. He's no Republican. The Democrats like to say he is, but he's no real Democrat. He's got idiosyncratic ideas at times, but he's clearly intelligent and he's challenging the status quo. If I was in America, I'd be voting for him, given the choice. What do you make of his chances?
Well, I think his chances are limited. I do think there are a couple potential pathways, one of which would be the best thing that he could pursue initially. And that would be to try and lure the libertarians to do something in their best interest rather than be dysfunctional as they've been during recent elections. Because if he could utilize the libertarian ballot lines, he would be in 48 states. And that saves him a tremendous amount of time and money. And it would benefit the Libertarian Party if they were smart, because it almost assuredly is going to gain what's called minority status under the FEC guidelines. And that translates into future federal funding. So that would be a marriage made in heaven. But I think he's an interesting person. He's got appeal on three levels. First, he's a Kennedy, as you mentioned, and while the magic of that name's weakened over time, it certainly still has cachet to it. Secondly, he's running against two of the most questionable candidates of our time. And third, as you heard in that little snippet, he offers a willingness to actually talk about issues, debate the facts, and he occasionally takes an unpopular position. So I think he would be refreshing to those who aren't conditioned to just cast a vote for the lesser of two evils because they're aligned with the party. And in that regard, you know, he has a chance that way. There's another obscure way where he could potentially disrupt the election if he could capture one or two states. If he could secure enough electoral votes to send it into the House. In other words, neither Biden nor Trump would be able to get 270, which is the required amount. It goes into the House. Well, the parties hate each other. And there's an outside chance that one of the parties has the vice presidential candidate locked up, which is decided by the Senate. And only two go to the Senate. Three candidates go to the House, the top three candidates. Only the top two candidates go to the Senate. That's why I said it's either going to be a Democrat or Republican vice president. One of those, he might be able to broker a deal where they decide he's the lesser of two evils, so they don't support their major opponent, and they settle for the vice presidency.
Interesting.
In alignment with him, and maybe curry some favor with him. There have been third-party candidates that have won electors in the past. It's very rare. The last was 1968. Democrat George Wallace, former Democrat George Wallace, picked up electors that year. All the way back to 1912, Theodore Roosevelt, who was a former president, ran as a third party, and he finished second because he split the Republican vote. And that's somewhat what the Democrats are afraid of. So I think there are pathways to be successful. But the parties are going to go to endless lengths to smear RFK Jr.,
yeah,
particularly the Democratic Party, which fears he's going to cost them the election.
But that has dangers. That has dangers too, TJ, doesn't it? Because if they deliberately smear him, it's the independents that both parties have to win. Donald Trump won them in 2016 and won the election over Hillary Clinton. He lost the independents and lost the election to Joe Biden in 2020. So if they go too hard after Kennedy, he might just get a whole bunch of those independents. And going back to the point you were making, he in all likelihood can't become president. But if he gets somewhere between 8 and 15% of the vote, which all the polls are showing him at the moment, some have him much higher, then he will clearly influence who the next president is.
Oh, I think there's no doubt about that. He has that potential. Ross Perot didn't win the election in 1992, but he garnered 18.9% of the vote. And as a result, President Clinton had to modify some of these major positions, particularly with respect to his economic policy, so he could reduce the threat of Perot in 1996. And a good showing by RFK Jr. could have a similar impact.
It's a very good point. Ralph Nader ran in 2000, and he took enough votes away from Al Gore down in Florida to allow George W. Bush to win Florida and, with those hanging chads, win the presidency as well. So they can have an impact, these people, can't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're looking forward to it all, or you had enough already?
Oh. Well, given it's what I do for a living, they can have a perpetual election cycle, and come to think of it, they already do. They never stop running. Whoever wins is going to start running the next time, or their party is going to start running the next wave of people. So it's always interesting. It's frustrating, but it's interesting.
Okay, there's calls and emails coming through for you, so I might get you to come on again on Thursday afternoon, if that's okay, and we'll put some of our listeners' calls and emails to you. It'll give you and I a chance to talk about the US Masters. It starts on Friday as well. But just before you go on this, we've only got a minute or so, but the vice presidential nominee is not always very significant, but I just wonder if this time, given that Kamala Harris has very low ratings and we've got the age and the unpopularity of Biden and Trump, whether Trump's nominee for vice president becomes more important than normal?
I think it absolutely does. And he's floated the names of some credible potential candidates. Some that he's floated, I don't think would accept it. I think they'll want to stay away from him and have a clean record going into the next presidential election. But others, I think, might step up, and they're all credible. They're articulate, the people that he's named. For the most part, he's named some other people, too, that if you aren't someone who takes prayer seriously, you may want to take it up if you name some of these people. But I think he's got a cadre of individuals to choose from that none of them would be afraid. Let's put it this way. None of them would be afraid to debate Vice President Harris.
Yeah. And she might have concerns about debating any of them, Mike Pompeo and a few of the others. Okay, mate, lovely to chat, and we'll do it again on Thursday. If you'd like to contact TJ, of course, you can do it on Twitter or X, formerly known as Twitter. He's at TJ O'Hara 2012, at TJ O'Hara 2012. And I'd recommend TJ's website. A lot of good writing on there, a lot of great stuff, TJOHara.com. That gets it, doesn't it, mate?
Sure is. I appreciate it. Thank you, Greg.
Good on you, TJ. We'll talk again on Thursday. TJ O'Hara from the US. 22 past 2 o'clock now at 4BC.